recording.
I'm sorry. Will we read the Sanskrit together? Is that
sure.
I mean, what's the standard Vaish approach?
There's no standard.
Oh, there isn't. Okay.
It's really up to you, Maharaj.
All right, well, for this is Om Gyanatam.
Vandasya Gyanatana Shalaka Chashur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashchatyadesha Tarine Tadashi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gauravaktavinoda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
So first we'll read the four Sanskrit verses, Chatusloki, Sanskrit, and then translation, and then we'll go back and dissect the first verse. Okay? Desham satata yuktanam bhajatam yukti purvakam vedami guryogam tam yenaman payantite. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Oh, he said to start with 10.
Yeah, that's what he said.
He said start with 10.
Yeah,
I know, but Chatusloki, I was confused about that also.
He said, we read the four verses.
Four verses.
And after that, go to the 10.
Yeah.
I misunderstood. I'm just trying to figure out, you know. Okay, I'm just doing what I'm told. Okay, let's start with 8. Aham sarvasya paroho mantasya mam pravartate iti matva vachante man buddha bhava samambita. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Machchitta madgatta pranaha bodhayantas parasparam katayantas chaman nityam krishanti cha ramanti cha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Tesam satata yuktanam vajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. Okay. Okay, I'll do it myself. Especially I'm facing this way. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding with which they can come to me. Desham evanukam partam aham agyana jamtama nashayam yatna bhavasto gyana deepena basvata. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. Okay, so now we'll go to 10. Verse number 10. and take each word from the word for word meeting. And now, what? You'll have to refresh my memory.
We go from word to word,
yes,
and see how the translation was put together according to these words.
All right.
And then go to the translation, and if any words like stick out, then we can share our realizations or thoughts, and then go to the purport and go from sentence to sentence, and just if anyone has anything to say about it.
No.
We're fine.
Once we start discussing, it'll be okay. Okay. Otherwise, if you want, you could either use my room or Grandview's room. Grandview's plenty of room. And we'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes. I'm okay. All right. Okay. It must be more difficult for you because I don't understand a word of Hungarian, so it doesn't. But you, I know what it's like when I'm sitting next to a Russian translator, right? And I have to listen to what he says because I understand. You know, your mind gets distracted. I can't think.
But you'll tell me if we are distracted.
Huh? You'll tell me. Okay. All right. Tesham. Yeah. We should do each word for word. Tesham unto them. Repeat. Satata yuktanam, always engaged.
Satata yuktanam, always engaged.
Bhajatam, in rendering devotional. Bhajatam, repeat.
Bhajatam,
in rendering devotional service.
In rendering devotional service.
Priti purvakam, in loving ecstasy.
In loving ecstasy.
Dadami,
Dadami,
I give.
I give.
Buddhi yogam.
Real intelligence.
Tam.
That.
Yena.
By which.
Mam.
Unto me.
Upayanti.
Come.
Te.
They.
Okay. Translation, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding with which they can come to me. I know I have a difficult time. I'd like to read the commentary. Okay, because the commentary elaborates on everything. So I'm going to go into the commentary before we start dissecting what's going on.
Okay. Excellent.
For me, usually when I'm speaking, when I read the commentary, that's where it all is. So I'm going to read the commentary all the way through, and then we'll go back. Okay? In this verse, the word Buddhi Yogam is very significant. We may remember that in the second chapter, the Lord instructing Arjuna said that he had spoken to him of many things and that he would instruct him in the way of Buddhi Yoga. Now, Buddhi Yoga is explained. Buddhi Yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness. That is the highest intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence, and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness in devotional service, this action is called Buddha Yoga. In other words, Buddha Yoga is the process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world. The ultimate goal of progress is Krishna. People do not know this. Therefore, the association of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. One should know that the goal is Krishna, and when the goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved. When a person knows the goal of life, but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he is acting in karma yoga. When he knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, he is acting in jnana yoga. And when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he is acting in bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga, which is the complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he is still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress in the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him. Okay. Now, I'm going to ask, does anybody have a particular word, rather than going word for word, does anybody have a particular word in the word for word commentary that inspires them in the way that Srila Prabhupada has translated it? And maybe they would like to share why it's inspiring to them. Because this is supposed to be interactive, I'm not going to. So let's start with that for the word for word. If there's a particular word that really inspires you, that somehow you have some realization, and you think that you'd like to share some realization and connection to the word, and especially in the way that Srila Prabhupada has translated, and even in this case may have referred to it in the commentary, as he has in some of the words. Yes.
For me, one of the most important words is satata yuktanam, the always engaged. And actually, as Prabhupada translates that as constantly, and that constant thing, that's a real challenge in my life, actually. And that's why it really struck me when we read it, how I myself can be always, constantly be engaged in devotional service, because if I'm not, then the Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tong will not happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem.
Yes.
So it's a challenge how to constantly always be engaged.
Mm-hmm.
What would that mean to be constantly?
What does it mean to be constantly engaged? Is that a question for me? Or is that a question for everyone?
It's just a topic. It's just a topic.
Uh-huh. Would somebody like to share some realization about what a constant engagement means? Yes?
I just... The Satata Yuktanam is also my favorite words. I analyzed in the... say Sanskrit point of view, that satata originates from the sat, which means eternally, and yuktanam came from yuj, which is close connection. So for me, this always engages eternally closely connected to the Bhajatan, you know, to Krishna's service.
So in other words, what you seem to be saying is that it's one who's eternally connected.
Without a gap,
yeah, but it seems that one actually has to be eternally connected without a gap in order to be.
Yes.
It seems like in order to come to Krishna and to be fully engaged in Him, one has to be fully engaged in Him.
Yeah.
In service to Him.
Something like that.
If you. Okay. It's.
That's interesting, that last point that you just made there. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, when he defines the difference between karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti, he says, and when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he is acting in bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga, which is the complete yoga. So he was saying the difference between the motivation here. And that the point I was trying to make there was that he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely. So, you know, of the nine processes of devotional service, we may feel there's gaps, but remembrance is always there, because you're always remembering that the goal is there. So it's just interesting that we all feel the gaps, but we're very clear in our mind what is the goal, and we're all constantly endeavouring to get that. And so Krishna, he sees that endeavour, and then he reciprocates in the way the verse is talking about.
Very important point, and actually that's why I couldn't resist. I had to read the commentary, because Prabhupada really makes that clear, that establishing the goal, once the goal is established, then the method to achieving that goal can open up to one. And I just want to share something I just heard. I've been listening to Prabhupada's classes during while I take prasadam. And just the other day, Prabhupada was saying, he said, if one, I'm paraphrasing, he said, one who is engaged in devotional service may not be able to be fully engaged. He says, but if he desires to be fully engaged, then Krishna accepts that as service. In other words, even though we may not be fully engaged, but we know the goal is full engagement, and we even lament for our inability to be fully engaged, Krishna accepts that lamentation as service, because one's hankering for the goal. And that's the point that Prabhupada is making here. Once the goal is established, but if the goal is not established, we have no understanding where we're going. But Prabhupada, right from the outset, established the goal.
At least we have to anchor it constantly.
That's the point that I extracted from that reference I just gave in Prabhupada's lecture. He said that Krishna accepts that desire as service to achieve the goal. But go ahead. I know you have more to discuss about to inquire about this constant engagement. But I just thought I would share that also. And if anybody would like to add something to it. Satatangirtan.
I was reading Radha Damodar Vilas. There's a phrase used, what Vishnu Maharaj was thinking. He said, I had this no-gap philosophy. So he said he was always engaged, he was always doing service, he was always doing something, and he called it no-gap philosophy. And this is very striking me, that he really was like engaging himself 24/7 and not giving a second for himself to do anything else. So this no-gap philosophy was...
So maybe we can discuss also how to comprehend devotional service with no gaps for our level of Krishna consciousness. Did you want to say something, Madhupati?
Yes.
Go ahead.
It looks like you indicated that this constant engagement and intelligence are conditions of each other. My perception is that Krishna gives an advance. Well, intelligence is a sort of payment for engagement. And I think he gives an advance, because without some minimal intelligence, we just individuals just cannot tell that what we are doing is service or not service. So we get some advance on intelligence to be able to make a decision whether what I'm going to do is service or service to Krishna or service to Maya.
I have a comment to that, but does anybody have any comment to that? I don't want to dominate.
I think the intelligence is given through the devotees. So
close to what I'm thinking. Very close. Very close to what I'm thinking. But go ahead.
I just realized recently that this intelligence, what Prabhupada normally speaks about, it doesn't mean that, you know, we are brainy or we have high IQ or something like that. But it means that we are able to understand spiritual topics and we are able to increase our faith in the scriptures. And it's totally different approach of intelligence than we have here in the West.
What was the last sentence? I'm sorry.
That's a really different approach about intelligence than we have here in the West.
Have it here in what?
In the West.
In the West.
In the West.
West.
Okay.
West.
In the West. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anybody? Something?
I think that our intelligence is only that we accept the advices.
The
advice given by the devotees. Maybe this is our intelligence we have, that we accept the association, or at least we are. So we talk to a devotee. We accept the presence of a devotee. This is the first intelligence we get.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that was the point that I was going to make. Go ahead, Priti.
Just I just read that Prabhupada said in a lecture that he got this that Krishna gives the devotee, if the devotee follows the instructions, that is the real intelligence, and
that is what
real intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
But Krishna gives advice for everyone. So not just for the devotees, but they don't follow his instructions. So this is the we don't shake.
Difference.
This is the difference between demons and devotees.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I like that point. Very good. I was recalling an advance. You said like Krishna gives an advance. And Prabhupada explains in the commentary in the Bhagavatam, the first canto, and he's spoken about it many times. And I also have a reference that I really want at some point wanted to read here about a conversation Prabhupada had on this verse, Tesham Satata Guptam, in New Vrindavan in 1976. But anyways, I'll get to that. But the advance that Krishna gives is he gives one the intelligence to accept Guru. Mm. Mm. That's the advance he gives. He explains that in Bhagavatam. He said, in other words, because we have to accept, and this is the point the Prabhupada makes in this New Vrindavan conversation. It's one of the heaviest conversations. Prabhupada is the devotee. I know the devotee who is blasted. But Prabhupada makes the distinction between how can one have the intelligence to serve Krishna without Guru. So the advance he gives is that a sufficient advance to recognize Guru. That's from within the heart. And then Prabhupada even said, in Prabhupada's words, of course, he said, "I am your intelligence." He said it in one lecture. Not only he said intelligence, one lecture in the verse, Shumbhata Svakata Krishna Punusha. No, not that verse. Shushusho Shraddhadada Shavasudin Katavashi. He says that I've given you faith. I've given you your faith. Which almost seems to, like, you know, suggest that, you know, Prabhupada is implying that he's given us both our intelligence and faith to follow. But he explains that point that at our stage of Krishna consciousness, that the process, our intelligence is what is supposed to be stronger to overcome the dictations of the mind, and it's higher than the mind. And he says in several places that the intelligence is the instructions of the spiritual master. So, therefore, it's even as one advances in spiritual life, and Prabhupada refers to that in the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries to Vyavasya Kabuti, Ekya Purunandana. Yeah, buddhi, intelligence. This is what Prabhupada is referring to in the commentary. But Krishna says this buddhi, this intelligence, is spoken about in the second chapter. As that, he says that the buddhi, the intelligence, is fixed on fulfilling instructions from the spiritual master. So, therefore, as I understand, in essence, what you're saying is the advance that Krishna gives to us is he gives us the intelligence to recognize the spiritual master. That's the advance. And then, of course, as we make progress in serving the intelligence of the spiritual master, then we get help from both external manifestation and internal manifestation within the heart. First help is in the heart to recognize. And then one continues to get help both externally and internally within the heart from both instructions of the spiritual master and the confirmation within the heart that, yes, I want to follow, go on following these instructions. So that's the advance that I understand that we get. But if somebody would like to add something, or even refute it, I'd be happy to hear.
Just thinking about the interchangeability of the word, the two words that we were just speaking about. The one was understanding or intelligence, and faith. We can interchange those two words within the context of the actual verse itself. I give the understanding, or I give the intelligence by which they can come to me. I give the faith by which they can come to me, because the intelligence increases the faith. And that's connected with earlier what we were speaking about. What Radharaja said, that intelligence is not some accumulation of knowledge for some purpose, but specifically the accumulation of knowledge to increase faith. So it's just an interesting interconnection there between those two words.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's a chicken egg kind of question, which was first, intelligence or faith? This ado shraddha, tato sadhu sangha. So first we need shraddha to get sadhu sangha, and the shraddha comes from the intelligence that Krishna gives us so that we can get sadhu sangha, meaning approaching a spiritual master somehow. Or we could get Agyata Sukriti, and that Agyata Sukriti awakens Shraddha so that it drives us to approach the sadhus. who finally we can accept as spiritual masters. So it's like, which came first, intelligence or faith? Can it could be interchangeable, but I still have a question, whether intelligence or buddhi is coming first, dadami buddhi yogam tam, or faith comes first, or they are really interchangeable.
Which comes first, the intelligence or the faith?
Yeah. Because Kedashanku said that it could be interchangeable, the two words.
Mm-hmm.
And
you see it as still distinguishable.
It could be, or it comes simultaneously, or it's like sometimes it comes first, sometimes it's... So it's
well, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I didn't know we were supposed to try to stick as much as possible with Prabhupada, but, and we will go back to that, but he does say in Madhurya Kadambani that faith comes from two sources. He says faith either arises from the forceful preaching of a Vaishnava in this life, or he says it can be from one's previous life. But one's previous life is that one has had some association with Vaishnava in the previous life and is carried over to this life. So he says that's the two sources of faith. It's very clearly delineates that in Madhurya Kadambini. So it seems to imply that well, association, without association, obviously, without association with devotee, one cannot find the right path for devotional service. But I'm still trying to understand what is it that you see? Is it you think that as our own intelligence?
No. I'm just asking whether these two words are really interchangeable.
Definitely connected.
I'm trying to figure out the order.
The order. Uh-huh.
But as I understand from the verse, it said that to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, and Prabhupada commented it with love and faith. So those who have faith and love, Krishna gives
intelligence.
To them real intelligence. So this is the first step, so faith and love. And
where
then
does he say that in the purport?
Not in the purport, I think. Not there.
It's not in the purport.
Not in the purport.
Where does he say?
In a lecture.
In a lecture. Uh-huh.
Something you...
Yeah.
You referenced before.
Yeah.
Okay, well, please, while you're looking that up, I'll just let right enough.
Yeah.
Maybe just another aspect to compare faith and intelligence through the function. Very often, that's what we learn from Advaita Bhunavaraj. The Vedic system, we define things through function. That's why it's different from the Western approach. So it's not a nomination, but the function, how it works. And I think faith has a totally different function as intelligence in this verse also. Intelligence, one of the functions of intelligence is to make categories. And I think here it also proves that intelligence here is to make the proper categories in our life. So just put our, whatever we do, to the right category, whether it belongs, which kind of yoga it belongs to. And that's a different function from faith. Faith is the basis of everything. And
but there are different kinds of faith.
Yes.
But faith also.
Yes, sure. But faith, yeah. But you need, but you use faith for another purpose than intelligence. I think the two have different functions in our life. And this work is very functional. And And we can raise also the question, why Prabhupada is translating Buddha Yoga as intelligence? It's not obvious. But if he does it as intelligence, maybe we should think about what in the Vedic system intelligence should mean or means. And from my understanding, intelligence is this kind of capacity to make the good categories, to make a frame for our everyday action.
Okay, yes, yeah, so we were supposed to go back to Prithvi right after that. Okay,
I don't know the... I just copied it.
You don't know the source?
Yeah. I can find, but here is the... what Prabhupada said. In the Bhagavad Gita, you will find Tesham Satata Yuktanam, those who are constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness. Satata means constantly. Tesham Satata Yuktanam, engaged. How? How engaged? Bhajatam Priti Purvakam, rendering service with faith and love. Only those persons who are in Krishna consciousness and rendering service with faith and love, to them only. But he mentioned it many times in the lectures, this faith and love. He always mentioned it together, not only love.
Actually, intelligence thing and Buddha Yoga and the connection between the two, it is interesting because in the verse, in the translation of the verse, Prabhupada doesn't mention intelligence. He says that in the word for word translation, but there he says, I give the understanding by which one can come to me, so that understanding and the intelligence, that should have some connection. And in this way, Buddha Yoga would mean the understanding with intelligence, understanding or make the distinction between things to do that helps us get closer to Krishna and things to do to get away from him.
That's the function of intelligence.
Yeah.
That is the function.
Okay.
Discrimination.
Yeah, so that's the understanding here. Still, I have the constant fear of not being able to constantly do something.
I think you and probably everyone else sitting here. But that fear is also healthy. According to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, that conversation, I'm sure you've heard it before, and a devotee asked Prabhupada, what is the difference? No. What was the question? What is the difference between you and me? And Prabhupada said, the difference is that I will never fall down because I'm always afraid of Maya. So, fear is, I mean, it's not the highest platform. That's definitely... It's not the full manifestation of love.
I can compare myself to Kamsa in that regard.
Fear of punishment?
Yeah. Krishna wants always everything. He says sarva dharma to battle everything. And here, satata, and there are many verses like this.
Yeah, but there's a there's a wonderful verse that in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, I quote it. I quote it a lot, but I don't remember the Sanskrit. Jatushara Madgatasu. But Krishna says, having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with sense gratification, knowing that all sense gratification leads to suffering, but still not being able to give it up, my devotee says my devotee should remain happy and go on serving me faithfully. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually explains that this verse is the beginning of bhakti. It's the beginning, it's the stage where bhakti begins. a devotee, he knows sense gratification leads to suffering, but he can't give it up. And if you know if you know sense gratification leads to suffering, and you can't give it up, generally, you're going to be suffering, because you know you're going to be punished. But Krishna says, no, be happy. Go on, worship me, happily worship me with his faith. Why? Because a devotee, and the verse goes on to explain that even the devotee knows that even though he can't give up sense gratification, he sincerely repents that he can't give it up. So in other words, he remains happy because he knows that that punishment is going to be Krishna's mercy, his kindness. And whatever Krishna does, I don't care whatever happens, as long as Krishna does it, then I'm happy. Better Krishna does it than Maya does it. If Krishna does it, then I can be happy, because Krishna's going to bring me closer to him, even if it causes me pain. So, but Krishna says, be happy. And therefore the devotee, when he realizes, I can't give it up, you know, he sincerely repents in his heart. And therefore, he voluntarily suffers by his repentance. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that's the stage where devotional service actually begins. He's awakened faith in Krishna. It's a very wonderful verse. And if you will read the prayer Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is quoted in that commentary to that verse, it's nectar. I can read it. I have it right here, but it's I don't want to, as I said, I don't want to dominate. But I'm just saying, what I'm saying is that what you're feeling is like, can be seen in a positive way. Now, it's your responsibility to see it that way. To see it in a positive way. Yeah, I'm not fully engaged. I know I'm not fully engaged. And I'm afraid of not being fully engaged, because I've heard so many things that could happen if I'm not fully engaged. I see so many different examples of what happens. But just those thoughts can actually evoke a positive, you know, something very positive. And generally, what the positive thought that can come from that is when a devotee resigns himself to the fact that he's not fully engaged, and he prays to Krishna, Krishna, do whatever it takes to make me fully engaged, even if I have to suffer for it. Because that's faith. That's faith. That's a real test of one's faith. So we have to get to that point, at least to Krishna, do whatever. And then Krishna accepts those prayers as service. Because it's not just what we do with our body that constitutes service. I mean, that's Bhagavad Gita, the essence of teachings of Bhagavad Gita. It's not just what we do with our body. Something else? I might. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't. Anybody want to take something? I mean, we could take Satata Yuktanam, and I could really get into it. I want to hear somebody else that has some things to share about maybe something else from the word for word. We've discussed Satta Yutanam and we've also discussed Buddha Yogam. What about Bhajatam?
Bhajatam and Bhajan, they have the same root?
Yes.
Right, I'm saying that the first process of devotional service by Rupa Goswami is Guru Ashraya. Guru Ashraya. To rest of the shelter of the Guru, of a real Guru. Then it is the advance, the first advance, then Krishna, Bhakti Krishna, which Krishna gives us.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first process of devotional service.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. Very good thing. That's right. Mm-hmm. Did you, everyone follow that? No, Madhupati, you look like you didn't hear it. You want to repeat?
So the first process of devotional service by Rupa Goswami is to accept the shelter of Guru, of a spiritual master, of a real Guru. And this is the same thing that the advance, your point, but Krishna gives, is an advance.
Mm-hmm. There are other interesting synonyms of the Radharaja Prabhu mentioned, but there's bhajan and bhajatam is the same, yes. And food for thought that the bhajan, like song, and service are the very same thing.
Mm-hmm. Is bhajan is what now? I didn't hear the first thing you said.
Speak up. So bhajan as chanting or singing and service is the same thing.
Uh-huh. But it's interesting, Prabhupada makes in the commentary, you notice that? Prabhupada actually makes distinctions. I seem to remember seeing that in the commentary. I'm sorry, I'll have to go back and find it. But Prabhupada definitely seemed to make a distinction between... he says, the qualification is that the person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services.
How do you mean this?
Bhajas worship. That's right. There's a short commentary that Baladeva Vidyabhushan gives in his Gita Bhushana. Of course, it's translated here a little bit differently by Bhanu Maharaj. He says, I give the intelligence to those who constantly desire to be with me and worship me with great love, by which they attain my direct association. And he says, in Baladeva Vidyabhushan, in this commentary, he says, he focuses on Guru. He says, how is it possible for them to grasp you, Krishna, who are infinite in form, qualities, and powers, just through the teachings of a Guru? And he breaks down. He says, for those who desire constant association with me, as Satata Yuktanam, who worship me with pleasure, understanding me as I really am, which is Priti Purvaka. So Satata Yutanam, he says, those who desire constant association with me, who worship me with pleasure, understanding me as I really am, as Priti Purvaka. I, relishing their devotion to me, offer to them intelligence, such that they can understand, worship, and attain me with infinite qualities and powers. Buddhi Yoga, that's how he defines Buddhi Yoga, by which they attain me. I thought it was budget Buddhi Yoga. That's it, that's the whole commentary. That's the whole commentary. Yes?
I think it's a nice example to see the lives of Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, who were a government officer, one of them, and the other was a minister in a Hussein shop. So in their lives we can see that they had a desire, and then they attained the personal association of Lord Chaitanya.
They had the desire to get his personal association and were prepared to undergo any inconvenience necessary to obtain it. Good example. That would be Satata Yuktana. The desire for constant association with the Lord.
And we can see it in our everyday lives that devotees come, but they still have their jobs, but they desire to render more service in the association of the devotees. So after some time they can give up their jobs and come to
A very good point. Would anybody like to elaborate on that? I think there's a lot of things that could be said about that.
That's a nice example for that. Not everything.
90%.
I'm richer than ever.
We need a new Sankirtan band.
Would anybody like to add something to that? Or would you like to add more to that? It's a very good point. I think a lot could be said about that.
It's an interesting point how we kind of approach that from different angles, from an institutional point of view. And if we see the history of ISKCON, we don't see so many examples of people who have been working most of their life, and then they live in a temple, or they live really close association to the devotees. There are some, but mainly what we see is that there are devotees who have joined the temple, and after that they go and they start working somewhere. I think that we are not old enough as an institution to see those devotees who have moved out from temples and they start working.
And they come back again?
And they come back again and they live in a temple or an environment close to the temple. And they render service because they are old. And they don't have to work, they have their pension or whatever, and then they can live there for a while.
What about it?
I wonder whether you mean the institution of ISKCON Hungary or ISKCON in general. I can give a nice example. I forget his name, but when I was traveling to Sweden, to Korsnäs Gård, I met a devotee who some 20 years before left the movement and started his family and so on. And I know this is not the path you mentioned, but it's still a good example. And after he raised his children, he just felt a big vacuum in his life. And he came back and he started a center in a Swedish city, and now it's a very nice flourishing center.
There are many examples. I mean, I can think of dozens of examples, but I think he's saying his observation in general.
But certainly, Hungary is not old enough yet.
I mean, there's even I can think of an example of God brother. His name, he just took sannyas last year. His name is. I gave him some ass. Bhakti Prabhupada Ratha Damodar Swami.
That's a mouthful, quite awesome.
Yeah, well, he wanted to keep the name Prabhupada Das. But Balan Nanda Maharaj didn't like him. He didn't want him to He thought there was something. And others felt also Prabhupada Swami was not the very... So they asked to come up with a name. That could, he wanted to keep Prabhupada in there. But anyways... he met Prabhupada in 1966 in Second Avenue, and he used to attend Prabhupada's lectures. He could tell you different stories, you know, because he used to. Has anybody ever heard anything about him before? He used to come a lot on intoxications, LSD. And Prabhupada even stopped him once in the door and said, "Lon, are you taking LSD today?"
Constantly.
I could say it because he tells everybody the story. But anyways, he was going and then he... You know, he was, Prabhupada even encouraged him to move into the ashram and to get more serious, but he wasn't ready for it. And he went about, did his work, got it, and he started his own business, got married, had a child, and then... Prabhupada... Poison was already there, probably. couldn't give up. It poisoned him in a positive sense. He couldn't give up his attachment to Prabhupada. He couldn't give up. He could forget. And in fact, he joined the Boston Temple when I was there. It was 10 years later. He came and never left. He left his wife and his child also. Nobody forced him to do it. So, in other words, there are examples of people who had the seed planted, went about their work, and they had a business. In fact, I won't get into that. It's a whole story. Yeah, I was a brahmachari in the temple, he said to our temple president, "Why don't you send some devotees to work in business with me?" So these traders sent me to work in the business. But then he got a letter from Prabhupada when Prabhupada accepted me as a disciple. Prabhupada told traders to take good care of me. And Tradas felt completely guilty. Immediately pulled me out of the business. But he had a business, furniture business, and gave it up. Desire for association, satata yuktan. Something else? More on this point? No? Well, I can say something. I'll just say something because I talk on this topic a lot. I won't say it. I'll make it short. And that is that Bhaktivinoda Thakura speaks about how to avoid association of non-devotees. And he makes the point that when householders who have to work in the world and have to be with many other people in the physical proximity of other people, he explains that to be in physical proximity with other people doesn't necessarily mean association. He says association means when there's affection. He said then what there is association. He says but if one interacts, affection. He says if one interacts with others in the course of executing his worldly duties, if he without simply as a matter of duty, but keeps his affection for devotees, then he will not be contaminated by such so-called association. So the essence of his instructions is how to live in the world, execute one's duties that he has to perform, but always within the heart keep the affection to be with the devotees. Because it's only with devotees that real dadati patigrinati guyamakyati pichati, which priti lakshana, where there can be actual affectionate exchanges. Non-devotees, there can be no real priti lakshana. So it's an important point, is that how to, and I also oftentimes make the point that sometimes, unfortunately, when devotees have the opportunity to be in constant association with devotees, their psychology goes to the complete opposite, thinking that, boy, this is too difficult. And they become attracted to associate with non-devotees, thinking that association is better. It's too much, I can't deal with it. I'm too familiar with devotees, and there's no piti lakshana, no affection. So,
what can be done?
Huh?
What can be done in these cases?
What can be done in that case? Oh, that's a 10-hour lecture. Minimum.
The battery will do it in the recording.
Huh?
We have enough battery in the recording.
Anyway, I don't know. That might be a digression, though, from our duties that we have to perform in the relationship to this verse. But yeah, there's a lot to be talked about. What to do essentially is this is it. This is the only way to overcome it. We have to break out of our pigeonholing that we tend to do when we pigeonhole. We pigeonhole people by pigeonhole means you categorize them. Through social interaction, we categorize everybody according to some defect, especially those that rub me the wrong way. And because we do that, because of familiarity, we don't interact on a spiritual platform. We interact on a social platform. And therefore, we have to break out of that paradigm and associate by seeing the Vaishnava in everyone, which is that we all have a desire to become Krishna conscious. And the only way we can appreciate that desire is by sitting down and associating with each other in that form. And if we don't do it enough, then we lose our affection for association with the beings. That's the essence. I mean. But I keep on hearing the dummy booty yoga dumb over there.
The same verse.
Huh? Okay. Yes?
Something came into my mind that's a kind of sharing my experience and feelings, and at the same time it's a question that Bhajatam and Priti Purva come. And Srila Prabhupada, as you mentioned in the purport, he says that devotees should with love and devotion render all kind of services, and that's how Bhajatam is defined here. And my personal experience is that I have a service as a bookkeeper, an accountant, and many times I should go to the tax authority and fight with the taxman there. And then we had a good fight, and I came out, you know, like a winner. And I could feel that Radhe Shyam is totally satisfied with that. And that give that Priti Purvakam, that kind of ecstasy. And sometimes I feel the same, like in a really, really deep bhajan, singing the holy names together with the devotees. And this is a really strange experience. And
strange?
Strange. You know, I'm in a tax office and fighting.
I thought you said the tax.
I thought you said the other experience.
In the tax office, and I'm fighting with the taxman. I feel the same that when I'm in a bhajan with lots of devotees and singing the holy name. So that's their sharing the experience and the question. So is it
okay?
Is it feel like that? Is it true? That's like some spiritual emotions. And really, that's Radhisham is satisfied with that.
How can that be denied? How could anybody counteract say that's not true?
I
say they have a lot of nerve.
Sitting in the office, it smells like, you know, people, and it's just strange to sit in the office that, you know, smell bad because of smoke and, you know, bad people, and you feel spiritual ecstasy.
Maybe the tax officer was Narada Muni. These guys.
Prabhupada had such ecstasies.
So when Prabhupada say, explaining, you know, when someone is go deep into their service, you know, that's not the situation what came into my mind. That's, you could do, you know, puja or do pujari service, then I could understand at least to ecstasy, but there seems to just too far away from the real thing.
Well, Krishna says all you do, all you eat, all you offer, give away, as well as all austerities you perform. It's an austerity. Some might think, how's an austerity a source of ecstasy? As long as the question is the consciousness, how do the motivation behind the austerities, whatever we're doing it for his pleasure. He wanted to say something?
Yes, I think that this is a really important point for the temple devotees also, and for those who are not living in the temple, that ecstasy cannot only be found during, you know, doing service in the temple itself. And you can find it anywhere.
Don't forget, we're talking about Arjuna on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Here. Krishna's talking about.
Wasn't he in the temple?
Sorry to interrupt.
and that gives a little hope that constant, that satata, that could be that could mean that anywhere and everywhere you could feel that ecstasy, that's priti purvakam. After that, because when I read a little further, then it says it's not always, not only that you should be always engaged, but you should be always engaged in devotional service. That's in ecstatic love. So it's like, you know, it's like he's just upgrading each and every word, you know, the expectation. But this thing would mean that. Yeah, you can have access in the tax office because you're fighting for Krishna. And maybe we could get ecstasy, you know, anywhere. Like, I don't know, buying a bottle of water for the devotees here. And it could be an ecstasy that we could do that in the end of the world, you know, that's nothing is around. And you can do that on Sunday afternoon.
He helped me to reform my question, so that means as my service to fight with the taxman. So may I say my bhajan is fighting with the taxman?
Your service. That's part of your bhajan. I hope you don't spend all your time.
He counts that on the beats. He counts that on the beats. How many tax officers?
yes, yes, that's part of your bhajan. But I have to say, full bhajan? I don't know. Bhajans, usually, it's again, as Prabhupada says, it's establishing the goal and then always pursuing it in everything that you do, whether you're in the tax office or whether you're getting up in the galarti. You know, it's like that's bhajan. Establishing the goal and always moving towards it. Although there's a, I think this interesting commentary, I've mentioned this many times, I've probably even said it in the class, is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary to the verse Smartavyam Satatam Vishnu. Smartavyam Satatam Vishnu. Vismartavyam Jatushit. Yeah, Jatushit. Savaviri Nisedishyo Ityo Evakinkara. That the word Satatam in that verse actually has a different meaning than always. And it makes the point that because there are vidis and the shadas, vidis are prescribed activities and the shadas are prohibited activities. Prescribed activity is to always remember Krishna. The prohibited activity is to never forget Krishna. He says, but if one is always remembering Krishna, then why does he have to worry about forgetting Krishna? Or if one is always engaged in prescribed activities, always speaking about Krishna, then why does he have to worry about what topics he shouldn't speak about in the shadas? So he says, therefore, in this verse, the verse can't apply satatam as meaning always. He says, in this verse, always means every day. So, in other words, the point is that Krishna himself, in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, says, always think of me. He says, but if you can't always think of me, he gives a concession that follow the regular principles of bhakti yoga. This way develop a desire to attain to me. So, you know, although we may not always be able to be fixed on the goal, but at least every day we should fix our mind on the goal. That is following the regular principles of bhakti yoga, which means there should be sadhana. That's part of our bhajan. Otherwise it's easy to forget the goal.
And then the ecstasy won't come
when you forget, why am I doing this? Anyways. Or, I've had enough, I'm not going to do it anymore. I can't deal with these people.
Does that mean that when Krishna says Dodami Bhuti Yoga, when he says that I will give you intelligence to constantly to reach him and like that, I give that intelligence to those who are constantly devoted, serving me with love. Does that mean that he gives the strength also so that one does not get into a situation when one says that, sorry, I cannot deal with that anymore?
Does somebody else want to comment on it before I, or maybe I won't even have to comment on it?
I have the same experience all the time.
Huh?
This is my experience, because it is so peaceful here and talking about constantly meditation, but I have the same problem all the time because I had no fight with the tax, in the tax office, but I have a fight all the time with Krishna. Sometimes, okay, enough. anyone, you know, has this question in the head sometimes, enough or impossible to
more than enough
meditate on you all the time and stop. Yeah, give a break, Krishna. Because this is my point also all the time, constantly, and this is a big inspiration, constantly and ecstatic love thinking Krishna. But when I'm distributing books, I think every day, maybe every second day, at one point, that's enough Krishna. Please give some break or peace from my mind. But I try to overcome. If I'm praying, if I'm thinking of him, I'm overcome of this. But I would like to be, thinking Krishna constantly and love him.
Oh. But his question was about getting the strength to do it, right?
Yes, strength. That's why I need it. Because one time Keshavabharati Maharaj told me, in the middle of a marathon, I called him and I told him, enough. And I said to him, and he asked why, and I told him so many excuses for him. And he said, stop. And I didn't stop. He said, stop. And I said, again things. And he said, stop. And after I stopped. And he said, when I'm meeting people on the street, if somebody says no, I need to say thank you. And he said, you have to touch the hands and shake hands with them. And I said to him, okay, I can do it, no problem. And he said, after the second level, he said, okay, shake the hands, see in his eyes, watch in his eyes, look in his eyes. And you have to feel from your heart some, you know, you are happy you said no, because you give a chance to me to go to the next yes. And you need to be satisfied, happy you said no. And I said to him, no, I will never do this. I cannot do this from my heart, because I can do it with my hands and with my body. I kind of do difficult to do with my heart. And this is my point, because you said desire. But I'm always, sometimes I can do it, but so many times I forget and I'm doing manipulation. And it's really difficult all the time to, you know, this is like a fire all the time, like fired up, like, okay, I'm happy, I'm satisfied, and I wanna give love, I wanna give. I don't care, Krishna, you give or not give, take or not take. I'm satisfied, because so many times I'm not satisfied. And I have a fight with this all the time. And that's why this constantly is a big thing, as you said, high level and love, you know, ecstatic love to give to him. It's really high level. And, my point is how can I all the time overcome in this problem, and I don't make a big thing.
Rejected. The question?
Yeah.
To whom?
Everyone.
Okay. Anybody want to respond?
I don't want to respond. I'm unable to respond. I'm unable to respond, but I like to add my thoughts on it.
Oh, your
thoughts?
Bring,
yeah, I mean...
in relationship to Satatam.
Yes, to the time. Because actually, any time I read a sentence like this, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they come to me. And any time I read it, I have the impression that it happens once. So once you are so advanced that you are on the level of serving Krishna with love, you will get the understanding. But when we are discussing it right now, I have the impression that it's happening all the time. So it's not just one sentence. So how, I don't know if you understand my problem. So is it just one general statement, or is something which is an ongoing process itself? So you have to advance your service.
What's the next verse?
Service. Sorry?
What's the next verse? Te shamavana kampatam mahamu gyana jamtama nasha yam yatma bhavasto gyana dipena baspata. Seems to me it's an ongoing.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. but when we said in the beginning that to give the understanding is that the guru is the understanding, that's the intelligence. But the guru is there once. I mean, this is just a one-time moment when you have your guru and then you are initiated. So it's like more like that you're traveling on a train and you have like important stops, but you're still on the train all the time. So
yeah, but what does it mean? One time, except Guru Prabhupada says, "I never forgot my spiritual master for a moment."
Yeah.
So what does it mean? One time, except.
These very historical important moments, but at the same time. You have to work on it all the time. So it's not just, I mean, I just going back to the causality,
mm-hmm.
what Radha Krishna Prabhu said in the beginning between faith and
mm-hmm.
Intelligence, that whether one is the source of the other, so which is the cause of the other, but actually this is an ongoing process between the two also, right?
Between faith and intelligence?
Faith, intelligence, and love.
Uh-huh. It is, yes, because according to Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the first stages of love is obedience.
Yes. So there are different...
It's just different stages of love also.
But when I read it, it's my understanding when I read... Because in Prabhupada, I mean, in the verse it says Priti Purvakam, which means loving ecstasy. But loving ecstasy, for me, ecstasy is like something... It's not just a temporary thing, but it's a very, very high level of love.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So it's a different, it's another status or another other level of devotional service or devotional love. But when Radha Radha Prabhu is fighting with Taxman, it's just a temporary ecstasy.
Uh-huh.
So what's the relationship between these eternal ecstasy being at that level all the time, or these? Experience, temporary experience of love.
Well, does anyone want to comment on that? Because I can also suggest that the purport might help us, but go ahead.
Yes, maybe I ask for Erika, but what I try to understand from you is sort of like what now somebody is engaging in devotional service. Krishna is intelligence, and if somebody maybe not always is 24 hours a day, but maybe 1 hour a day want to serve Krishna and sincerely want to serve Krishna, and then Krishna gives him intelligence how to serve him or what is needed. And maybe it's not 24 hours, but then it can grow up. Maybe this is the goal, is satatam is 24 hours a day, 24/7. This is the goal. Maybe we are not here there, but when we want sincerely serve Krishna, and Krishna gives the intelligence, but some we not always serve Krishna mentally or physically, but when we move in that direction, is that the experience of the dhammi is maybe is also build up.
It's also build up. Okay. Somebody else or something to add?
Where does ecstasy come from?
Ecstasy?
Where does it come from? Because we can't be in ecstasy all the time, because in other purports, anytime Prabhupada translates Priti Purvakam in other purports, he talks about it's something unofficial. It's something not what you want, but what you feel. So it's an unofficial feeling. Like what is the definition generally in ecstasy? But if I have only time to do service once a day, I mean 1 hour a day, I can't be in ecstasy. So ecstasy is something more.
Well, I'm not going to completely analyzed it, but I just I'd like to add just another element to the point that you made, is that yes, if we have 1 hour a day doing service, then, but it can only take one moment, not even 1 hour. That, what is that verse of the Bhagavatam? What is the value of prolonged life? Wasted. What is the value of prolonged, which is wasted? What is the value of prolonged life? By inexperience, by many years in this world. Better 1 moment to full consciousness, because that will enable him to search after his ultimate interest. Right? 1 moment. So my point is that devotional service, when one actually makes a connection with Krishna, it's not just a 5 minute, 1 moment, 1 hour connection with Krishna. It puts everything else into proper perspective. And then everything else becomes a support or subordinate activity for that devotional service. In fact, Rupa Goswami defines it as Gauna Dharma. Gauna Dharma means it's, you know, the work that we do when we're working, we're going to our job, we're making money, we're dealing with people, we're coming home, we're dealing with family. We have so many other responsibilities. You can say that has nothing to do with devotional service. But it can. But it can if that devotional service was actually performed in full consciousness, because then everything else, that's devotional service performed in full consciousness. It's for Krishna, and therefore everything else can become subordinate. So it's not just that 1 hour. Everything else, although it's not, you know, the, what's the word? I'm looking for, huh? Yes. Well, no, that's not the word. There's another word in Sanskrit I'm looking for, but it's not coming to my mind. There is the Tasta Lakshana, and what's the first? Huh? Sarup Lakshana. That's it. Sarup Lakshana. That's what I was looking for. But it's secondary. It's secondary. It's, and it's service when performed with the proper consciousness. Even though it may appear like, oh, someone's going to work and making money, why aren't they doing anything substantial? Why aren't they doing anything? You know, but if in his mind he's using his money for as an offering to Radha Shamasundar, or in his mind that he's just taking the bare minimum to maintain his family so that he can be at the temple every evening to hear Bhagavad Gita class that he does every evening, you know, that you can't minimize what he's doing out there. It's service. So it's not that it's just the 1 hour service, it's service. But if it's done in the proper consciousness, all of one's other activities can actually become part and parcel of devotional service. And then you know you're engaged in devotional service. Yes?
Following on this point and connected to Gandharva Prema Mataji's point regarding Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, it's like they didn't consider that as a service, what they did.
No, because they were serving meat eaters.
Yes, but still, they were in the right consciousness. They were doing that to maintain their whatever they had to. So that could be considered as service to Krishna because they were in the right consciousness. So they had the 1 hour direct service, let's say, a day. And they had the, I don't know, 12 hours of serving Hussain Shah. But could that be considered a service? Because that's the same thing with some of us who are not rendering service full-time in the temple.
But in their cases, it was quite different. Obviously, it was Lila, their eternal associates of the Lord, which is one thing, but I'm not going to... But it's not like they were, you know, they were already fully renounced in their heart. I mean, they received an instruction from Lord Chaitanya prior to that. You know, just perform these things externally, but within your heart, you should always... And that Krishna will move all obstacles completely. And in fact, he wrote that letter, actually. Prabhupada explains that. He says that, like a woman who has a paramour, when a woman has a paramour, she should perform her household duties in such a way that the husband never suspects. But within her heart, she's always thinking of her lover. So in other words, they were already on the highest platform. For them to renounce all of that, that's what we worship them for, is because they gave it all up. But not everybody is on that level where they can renounce everything and give it all up. And neither should they sit one in the table if they're not on that level. So, in that sense, no, serving Hussein Shah wasn't Gauna Dhamma. It wasn't Gauna Dhamma. But Bhaktivinod Thakur, the Vaishnava Siddhanta Mala, is very wonderful. I have it, I could read it, but it's very short. He explains that all of these things are part and parcel of Kirtaniya Siddhahari. Maintaining one's body, maintaining the body of one's family members, all these things are all part and parcel of Kirtaniya Siddhahari.
That's a synthesis of the other day. Can I ask a question regarding Radhana Prabhu's, whether that's a final or that's a stage that happens once?
The ecstasy? Oh, no, I see. No, no.
Intelligence.
Yeah.
I achieve a stage and the intelligence will come and then I'm enlightened. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I don't know the English, whoever surrenders, however,
as he surrendered to me, I reward him accordingly.
Yes.
Everyone follows my path and always works.
Yeah, so does that have any connection with this Dodami Bhuti Yogam Tam? I will give them as much intelligence as they surrender to me.
Yes?
Okay.
Any other questions?
Yeah. So that's a never-ending story. So it's like there's.
Well, hopefully our devotional service is a never-ending.
Yes. I don't think I have any more questions. I'm
Srila Prabhupada says it in the purport. One should know that Krishna, the goal is Krishna, and when the goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved. It's not like that's it, we're there. It's a progression. And just connected with what Radhana, who was that? No, what was that question? I can't remember who said that, but about ecstasy and love, that love is an exchange between two people. It's not an inanimate feeling. And that the ecstasy when the devotee feels is actually because Krishna is happy, then the devotee feels happy. So just came into my mind there that when we're doing our service and we're not feeling happy, my old temple president used to say, because you're not doing devotional service, you're mechanically doing it. And it's connected with sometimes how I feel when I'm doing Sankirtan, that you're doing it with maybe some fruitive, well, I'm doing it at least with some fruitive motivation, and not specifically because I'm trying to express that love, that appreciation, and that I'm happy doing what I'm doing. And so, you know, because the motivation is not pure, because there's some fruitive result there, which is defined in the purport as karma yoga, and not bhakti yoga, you're not doing it out of love, then you know, the ecstasy just doesn't come.
That means when we have this mentality, that means I'm doing karma yoga.
That's it.
Yeah, that's Prabhupada said.
That's the first level. Yeah.
That means I'm in the clothes, devotional clothes, you know, bhakti yoga clothes and everything. You know, I look like practicing bhakti yoga, but when I have this mentality, you know, I try to say to Krishna, okay, be the peace, or, you know, I don't know, give him money, or can I get more books, anything. If I have this mentality thinking, that means I'm practicing karma yoga.
Would that be true to say that, Maharaj? Or is it tinged with karma yoga?
Or
Karma mishra yoga.
Karma mishra yoga, yeah. So, the main thing we have to overcome of this, because we need to practice bhakti yoga.
After Rupa Goswami forgot the verse. But the Bhakti Mukti Spriha Yava Pisachi Hirivatate, he says that as long as the desire for bhakti is there in the heart, it's for some enjoyment, the desire for mukti is there in the heart. He says they're two like two witches which hunt one with a ghost.
Okay.
As long as these desires in the heart, the one will never be able to taste the bliss of devotional service to Krishna.
Witches.
Like witches that hunt one like ghosts.
It came into my mind for Radhanath Prabhu's question that is a stage and we attain that and we are ready to attain or that's the process. The verse says that to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they come to me. And I was thinking about what will happen when we are with him. And what will happen, we will constantly devoted to serving him with love. Somehow it's again the same. So the devotees many times say that our process and goal is the same. So it's not something we attain the stage and everything change or everything is become empty. But we just continue what we did before, maybe in a different form, but we just do the same.
Yes. We have no complete realization or conception of what the same is, as long as you think the same is but the same that we're doing right now. We may become discouraged and think, well, I don't want to go.
There's no tax offices in the spiritual world.
If Prabhupada even says that in the, was it 435? Where he says that when the person, they think that when they hear they're eternal, if they think they have to live like this eternally, I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, I was going to say something. What was it? Oh. I was going to say something, but I completely forgot. Oh, I remember what it was. It was about, with him. Krishna says, they come to me. They attain my direct association. Sometimes we have a tendency to think that, you know, that's the end. But it's not, because those who attend Krishna's direct association it actually experience the highest ecstasy of separation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, those are the ones who really have attained Krishna. So it's not like it's all over. You're like,
oh, here I am, Krishna.
And that's it, you know. Is this finished? I'm here now. How are we going to do it, me? You're stuck with me. What am I going to do? It's not like it's... We really have to understand what does it mean to attain it. And I actually had this. It's a long story. I won't tell.
Please,
huh?
Please.
We have time.
Yes.
No, I want to make sure it's completely connected before I tell it. I had this realization. I want to try to make it as simple as possible without having to digress the whole discussion. But it's in terms of attaining Krishna. And it was in reference to I was reading recently a quote from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, where he explains that when one chants, he said, and he gives so many reasons why one should not chant because of social unrest, one should not chant because of disease, one should not chant to become free from, you know, from distress, and so many other things. He says all these other types of chanting are useless. And he said, I gave a class on it the other day. How do you get a whole thing? That's what he says. He says it's useless. And he said that one should chant only for the purpose of attaining Krishna service. He said, this is useful, chanting. Everything else is useless. And
one more time?
I can give you the quote. I have it right here if you want.
Only for
devotional service. Yeah. I gave a whole lecture on this topic just the other night in Germany. But there's light at the end of the tunnel. It's very positive. It's not. It's very positive. Very positive. When seen in the proper light, why should the Bhaktisiddhanta explain that? Why he said it? Yeah. Why? There's really good reason behind it, and it's. But I don't want to digress. Of course, I don't think it would be a digression, but let's get to the other point about attaining Krishna. And I was relating to a story I told you the other day about being in the gym. And I was in the gym in America, and these two guys came up to me, and you know, and one of them said, you know, like, you don't look like the kind of person that would be every morning coming to the gym. You don't look like you belong here.
That's what the UK. Icebreaker.
Would he say quiet? So I, you know, yeah, and I was one of the guys, look at us. So I was thinking, you know, why do you say that? And then the other one said because you look too peaceful. And then he got into a whole, you know, we got into a whole discussion. And we talked for quite some time. And the first part of our discussion was about me. And they were really, really interested in hearing about all the different places I traveled. They were really intrigued by the fact that I had been to so many places in the world.
sorry.
What's that?
No, it's nothing. It's just.
Oh, I thought you were showing me something.
No,
on the screen.
No, I'm sorry.
I thought you were showing me some place I'd never been to. Sorry. So I was really getting into the. I was kind of responding to the. You know, yes, I've been there. And they said, "Have you ever been to New Zealand?" I said, "Yeah, I was in New Zealand." So, wow, what's it like in New Zealand? I said, "Well, a very beautiful place." And I told them about Lake Truro and things like that. And then we got back into the original point of their coming to me about inner peace. And then they started asking deeper questions. And I started really taking advantage of the shift in the conversation, you know, to start discussing more deeper topics with them about inner peace. And I talked about chanting, and I talked about the effects of chanting and how that one actually becomes peaceful and happy and joyful to the degree that, you know, that one can actually experience a higher pleasure and transcend, you know, the. And, you know, then they started asking me, started relating to the different things in my life, because they, I told them previously I had been celibate, and they said, "Is that how you can be celibate?" I said, "Well, yes, yes, that's one way that it helps to be. Celibate is by experiencing a higher pleasure." And then one of the guys who was listening, one guy was asking most of the questions, the other one was kind of just listening, and he just sounded like, he just said, I said, "Can I understand that what you're saying right now is, I think I have a better understanding about why you travel all over the world." And he said, "All these other, you don't go there because of the sights. You go there because you have something to give people." And you become, because they saw him, he's becoming very happy. They can do it. He saw him as becoming very happy. Happier, a lot happier talking about these topics than, you know, talking about all these other things. And he kind of put it, clicked together and said, you know, that that more, you know, is the opportunities you have to give what you have and sharing it with others. That's why you travel. And, you know, I thanked him, I said, for his perception, and he actually, you know, it's true. I said, I don't even visit many of the places. I don't go sightseeing any places I go to, things like that. So I was relating to that when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, you know, about how we should be chanting for service. And I was actually thinking, you know, that actually, oftentimes we think of going back to Godhead as just getting out of the material world. You know, like, sometimes you even hear the word, "I just want to go back to Godhead." You know? I know somebody who's like that. I always try to correct them. Because it's sort of like a liberation kind of feeling. I don't want to have anything. You know. But actually, how can we go back to God unless we actually have some attraction for service? Because it's the service. When one actually, going back to Godhead may sound very attractive. "Oh yeah, I'd like to go there." But actually, if we're just meditating on service, and that's what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is saying, is the mind is absorbed in service. That is the mood required to enter and to go back to Godhead. Without which, there's no question. You're not going. You're not going. Therefore, it's the service that's attractive in being back to Godhead. I mean, surely there's Vrindavan, there's wish-fulfilling desire to use, there's everything else that's there that's you know, Udipan, that stimulates an attraction for Krishna. But it's the service. So it's attaining Krishna means attaining service. And it doesn't stop there. It only just begins. And that's what, you know, Lord Kapila did. Satam Prasanga Mamavirya Samadho Bhavanti Hrit Kang Vasayana Kata Tach Joshua Ashra Prabhagavatmani Shradharati Bhakya Nukhmishati. In this state, that's when your devotional service begins. And how does it begin? Satam Prasangam. Hearing. Hearing. Hearing about Krishna's pastimes, the spiritual world. Have become attracted to the service that so many of his confidential devotees are engaged in, satisfying him in the highest way. That's service. So attaining me is not like a, it's not like a ceiling we hit our heads on. It's just a continuation of what's already begun here. If we don't begin it here. Yeah, that was my realization, I thought, sure.
Yeah? I was just wondering why Srila Prabhupada is using this word mystic when he is explaining the word yoga in Bhakti Yoga. He writes that yoga is a mystic activity. So why does he say that devotional service is a
in the commentary?
Yeah, process. It's so interesting for me.
Would somebody like to look at it? And somehow I feel like I'm speaking too much.
He says,
huh?
You're okay with that.
I'm not following the rules.
We won't tell.
He says that Buddhi means intelligence and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Buddhi. Buddhi means intelligence, yoga means mystic activities and mystic elevation. Yes?
For me, mystic means not material. So above the material things.
I'm looking up the definition of mystic. It says that a person who seeks by contemplation and self-surrender to obtain unity with or absorption into the deity or the absolute, or who believes in the spiritual apprehension of truths that are beyond the intellect. We're engaged in this together.
Inconceivable.
Huh?
Inconceivable.
Yeah.
Is that the only definition? Because that is the mystic in a personal sense, as a person who is a mystic, rather than the phenomenon of being mystic, something being mystical. Is that the only definition there?
You know, it's surprising. It's the only definition.
It's just a noun. There's only a definition for a noun.
Yeah, well, adjective.
Well, mystical.
Mystical is other relating to mystics or religious. or religious mysticism.
No, mysticism.
Yeah. Mysticism? Inspiring a sense of spiritual mystery, awe, and fascination. The mystical forces of nature. That's the second one. I'm trying to understand, you know, why Prabhupada used this.
Yeah, it's strange, because mysticism is for monism, whatever this term.
Not necessarily.
Huh?
Not necessarily.
No, it doesn't necessarily mean monism, does it?
But by Indologist, it means that monism, mysticism is the same than monism.
Yeah, with Indologist.
Yeah.
Don't count.
Well, absorption into the deity. Absorption into the deity.
That's more rare.
Whoops. Yeah.
Maybe because Srila Prabhupada here is talking to, in the purport, he's explaining
the whole theme to someone who hasn't started practicing spiritual process. So he's like creating a question mark in one's head, or like a deep desire to try something he has never experienced before. That's why he's using this word mystic, because for materialist people, he who has never had any spiritual experience before, it's like something to be desired for.
That's a very good point. I think that's probably also one of the things we're supposed to do through our process of analysis of these translations and commentaries, is why did Srila Prabhupada use particular words? And it's obvious that Prabhupada, in many places, not only used words, but even inserted words, which have aren't even in the verses, for clarity in the sense of understanding the mentality of the audience, because that's one of the responsibilities of Acharya, is to actually to connect with the audience according to their capabilities to understand. The Prabhupada would definitely insert things.
Mystical must have been very attractive in the 70s.
It must have been very attractive.
For someone who has never heard about Bhakti Yoga, it sounded like, okay, let's try it.
It sounds like esoteric.
Let's get into it.
I mean, I'm a perfect example. I mean, because I picked up Bhagavad Gita in a bookstore, as I was going to look for a book on yoga. And as soon as I opened up, the first picture I came to was a mystic yoga sitting on the different chakras and going up. And then, as soon as I saw that picture, I was thinking, this looks like a kind of book I'm looking for. I bought the book. I bought the book, and someone may look at that picture and say, of course Radha and Krishna are there on top, I believe, in the painting, but you know, it's Prabhupada definitely authorized its use, and it was right after the Macmillan Gita was printed, 72, I got the book.
Wasn't that used on Easy Journey?
Yeah.
Was that in the printing when Prabhupada, not the original printing, because he printed that in India, but on the reprint, was Prabhupada present at that time when that picture was used?
Was Prabhupada present
at that time when the reprint was done, when that picture was used?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Cover?
I'm not sure when the reprint was done, but it was definitely published when Prabhupada was here. But, I don't remember.
I mean, that's definitely a mystical book, isn't it? You know, Easy Journey to Other Planets. I mean, it's not like anything else. It's
I'm sorry, I tried to follow the line, but
the line.
Nice.
Toe the line.
Toe the line. So.
It's Hungarian. Because I missed the conversation. So Prabhupada said in a lecture, Prabhupada said many times this Buddhi and different perspective. In Mayapur, 1976, February 16, in Srimad Bhagavatam lecture, he said that Buddhi means to know what is your problem of life and endeavor for solving this problem. This is called Buddhi. Therefore, Bhakti Yoga is known as Buddhi Yoga. This is
back to the word mystic, that many times we do things that seems natural to us, but for karmis it's extremely mystic. You really never ever eat meat, no, really. So it's for them, and many other things. So for them, actually,
it's mystical.
Yeah, that's a mystic process. How could you maintain yourself? And you know, when they see me, then they understand, because I'm like that. But there are other devotees where the shapes are different. And for them, it's really mystical. So if he eats only salad, then how could he look like that? It's mystical.
He doesn't only eat salad.
Yes, very simple.
funny.
Actually, I just picked it up, as he probably said, about the good yoga. That's, we already said that, so it just underlines that. That's why Prabhupada probably translates good yoga as understanding in the translation, because this is the analytical knowledge of the surrounding and life.
Mm-hmm. Understanding.
Because, you know, Buddha Yoga, in the synonyms, he says real intelligence, but in the translation it becomes understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, there's, because that's the most important, probably, meaning of that word in this context, or in this verse.
Understanding is the word?
That's how he translates it.
Yeah, I know, I'm somehow not...
So from Buddha Yoga, we go to understanding.
From intelligence, yoga of intelligence, it goes to understanding.
Yeah, in the Word Bible translation, he says real intelligence, yes. But in the translation, he always says understanding.
Uh-huh.
So the intelligence is not there anymore, the yoga is not there anymore.
Okay, I got you.
Sounds like my life.
That's right. I wanted to read that conversation called by delivering Davin. I don't know if it's. Anybody else have some other points that they want to discuss? Anything related to verse, commentary, or topics we've already discussed? Yes.
I don't know if anyone else has a problem with this. Yeah, I have. So a person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but he is not intelligent enough to make progress. It's like me. So, but I don't think that I will be the one who will be instructed directly by Krishna. But this is this comes after. But how can it happen that someone have a bona fide spiritual master and is attached to a spiritual organization, but is not able to make progress, but we see that it happens?
How is it that somebody can make progress?
Can't really. It is not. At least I feel myself that.
Well, how is it somebody
cannot
make progress?
And in what kind of situation can it happen that Krishna gives instructions to this kind of person?
Well, there's a commentary, Ninth Canto of the Bhagavata, where Prabhupada talks about Krishna's protection comes. It was in the story of Maharaj Ambarish. Explains how Krishna's protection is there right as soon as one begins devotional service, right at the very beginning. And of course, our beginning of devotional service is, in most cases, a jati sukriti, rendering some service to a devotee who somehow. And our devotional service began. So, if Krishna's protection is there, we have two more minutes. Really? Are you serious? No. Please.
I'm just
okay.
Ezt a gondolatot befejezzük, és igen.
Max
másfél perc.
Okay. 1.5 minutes. 1.5 minutes left.
1.5. Well, I guess I'll just try to make it faster. Protection begins right at the very beginning. It means that, yes, one has a bona fide spiritual master. One doesn't have the intelligence to serve or to follow strictly the spiritual master by serving within the institution. But because he's approached the devotee with a sincere desire, then Krishna sees the sincerity. And that's what Prabhupada talks about here. And therefore may put the devotee in a situation which will help them to realize the importance of both the institution and instructions of the spiritual master. They have to become more serious. Krishna won't forget that person because of that service rendered. Is that okay?
Okay. Now we will just line up there somewhere at the back. We will have a vote on what we will do in the afternoon. Whether we will continue this discussion or there will be discussion whatever topics we have with Niranjan Maharaj and Shivaram Maharaj. Free association with them. That's the
Or with each other.
Or, yeah. Yeah. Mainly they want to associate with you and Shivaram Maharaj.
Anyway. So that's now. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Did I remember to turn it on?